Okay. No, I think what we may have to do is actually just maybe pick up on those administrative issues which you want to talk to us about
before we
actually put up the agenda.
Yes.
Because obviously there are actually developments which got us to today's meeting and the agenda of the meeting, which we'll talk to it. Maybe on the administrative issues, I can ask you just to speak to us about that.
No problem, Chair.
Yes.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, everyone.
Chairperson, just before, I see some unnamed devices on the group.
Oh, okay.
Are we letting people in who've been invited to the group, or is everybody named, maybe?
Yeah, let's do this first, then maybe, Andre, what's important is just to say, can we just account for the members of the committee and just to make sure that we're speaking to the meeting that is constituted, and maybe actually run through that first.
Yeah, oh, no problem.
Before we look at that, yeah. So let's so that Honorable Hammonds, the point you're raising, there might be actually additional connection over and above the committee members. I'm sure there is actually profile and scope on the side of the Secretariat to look at that. So let's actually check if ever we have all the members of our committee connected, present in the meeting.
If I may proceed, Chair, we have the 10 members who have indicated their presence today. We have one apology, Chair. Mr. Cuthbert is not, he's on paternity leave, so he will not be joining us today. But all 10 other members are present of the committee. If members see other names on the list, it is an open meeting, so the link may have been sent by other people to them, and also we've invited other people who indicated they want to be part of this particular meeting, Chair. So shall we proceed with calling members' names, Chair, to confirm their presence, Chair?
Please.
Mrs. Hermans?
Hermans?
Present.
Mr. Mbuyani?
Mbuyani? Mbuyani? Maybe he's moving. But you have him connected?
Yes, Chair. Mr. McPherson? Okay.
McPherson?
Sorry, present.
Okay.
Mr. Mulder?
I'm present, Chair. Present.
Okay.
Mr. Mantashe?
I did hear, was talking to her earlier. Mantashe?
Yeah. Okay. We'll move to Ms. Mwatse?
Mwatse?
Present.
Ms. Yaku?
Present.
Ms. Mutahum?
Mutahum?
Present.
Okay.
And Mr. Thring?
Honorable Thring. Okay. So we do actually have those members connected and available for us to start the meeting. So, as Honorable Hammonds, can I just check? Because I think on the now names or the connection you see, I'm not sure if ever the issue of concern you'd like to pursue that, or you comfortable with what the Secretariat has said. Hammonds?
No, if the Secretariat is endorsing the list of people that are on the group, I'm comfortable, Chair.
Okay. All right. So I think the core part of the meeting is covered, because members of the committee do make a quorum for us to be able to proceed. Can I ask Secretary then to speak to those administrative issues we want
Chair,
to raise?
Just on the issue of the, at the last meeting on the 19th, we had the NCC, and we couldn't conclude our engagement with them because of the time constraints. The NCC has submitted their written responses to us, Chair, and I forward to every member a copy of the written submissions. So just want to put it on the record, they did submit, so it will reflect in the minutes that they submitted their written responses as agreed to by the committee on yesterday. So all members have it. And then, Chair, members will also have the budget vote report for after the meeting. We will engage on that matter. So they will have that. Also, just to alert members, there are some changes to the program, I think, which we'll probably speak to at the end or on Thursday. We can speak to the changes to the program going forward, Chairperson. Okay. But those are the issues that I thought I'll just address before we proceed with the substance of the meeting.
Yeah. So let me just say it also speaks to today's meeting, because we had actually a presentation that we were supposed to process. But I think we actually have had a minister actually coming through, which I think the committee members have prioritized and have actually engaged in the previous meeting about that. Maybe a small one, the apology which I've received, which you actually confirmed as well. I think for honorable members, it's such an important point. It's paternity leave. I'm not sure if everyone is familiar. You have maternity, paternity. For my part, it actually has to do with the parental rights agreement, which we should have. And can I ask all the members, don't phone Cuthbert. He is in a very special place. And I've actually advised him not to open up his phone, no WhatsApp, no laptop, because it's quality time. From yesterday to till the end of the month, I think we're actually wishing him well. It's a new member of the family joining, which I think it's a very important thing, and we congratulate him for that. And I think those are precious time we want members not to waste. So it's very important. Can we then proceed to the part of our program, the agenda, honorable members? If you can screen your agenda. Secretariat?
Margot, just the agenda, please.
We do have the adoption of the agenda. It's actually about the input of the minister, and there's questions and answer session. It will be connected to the previous discussion we had. Remember, we had the DG and the deputy ministers. Questions and issues that came up, we'll engage on that. The consideration of the first draft of our budget is what the Secretariat has raised as well. So those are the two main items. Can I actually ask that then we get the members to adopt the agenda for our discussion to follow? Andre?
Chair, just to the minister also indicated that he's requested to leave at 10 to 2 because he has a 2 o'clock meeting he needs to attend to. So the minister will engage the committee until 10 to 2, Chair.
Okay, because we are immediately going to have a minister before us engaging. So I think we would actually note that. Thank you very much.
Ms. Mutahung, Chair.
Come again?
Ms. Mutahung wants to move, Chair.
Oh. Honorable Mutahung.
Thanks, Chair. I move for adoption of the agenda.
The agenda adoption moved. Is there any seconder?
It's three here. Just before we do that, I did not see the presentation from ITAC. Is there a change? Were we not supposed to be looking at that presentation today as well?
Secretariat?
Chair, at the meeting on Friday, the committee agreed if the minister is available, we will make space for the minister to present to speak to the committee. ITAC will be rescheduled for the narrative. If you look at my communication, email and SMS, I indicated that we will reschedule ITAC, Chair. So ITAC will not take.
Honorable Tring, we're moving today's meeting to Thursday, because we're having the minister with us today, as okay. The committee really emphasized we should. Thank you very much. Mutahung did move adoption.
Chair.
Yes, Hammonds.
Chair, just to clarify, the correspondence from the Secretariat did not indicate that we'll consider the ITAC item on Thursday's agenda. Maybe if they can confirm that, but after that explanation, I will then second the adoption of the agenda. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you,
Chair,
very much.
Yes, if I may, Chair. ITAC will not be on this coming Thursday. It will be next Tuesday because the technical institutions, there are three CEOs that we are getting together for Thursday's meeting. So ITAC will be next Tuesday, Chair. That will be that I mentioned there's some change to the program, and I wanted to address that almost at the end of the meeting. But ITAC will then be next Tuesday, Chair, not this coming Thursday, because we keep this Thursdays as was scheduled.
Okay. No, that's fine. Can we then actually, with that secondment of the adoption of the agenda, is there any objection? In the absence of the objection, can you allow me to invite the minister to speak to us? And Honorable Minister, welcome. We did actually have last Friday the discussions with the ministry, and we did actually have the deputy ministers and the DG speaking to the issues that you would actually be picking up on and taking us through. So can I allow you the floor, Minister, welcome you, and thank you very much. And I hope you get stronger. I heard that your voice is quite okay. And we would really actually make sure that you actually stay roadworthy because there's a long road that you have to travel. Minister, floor is yours. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good afternoon to the officials of the department who have joined us, and I know both deputy ministers are in the process of being connected. So really a good afternoon to everyone. First, let me start, Chairperson, by thanking you and the committee for accommodating my absence at the last meeting of the Portfolio Committee, and for the good wishes that I received after the last meeting from a number of members. Thank you very much. There were text messages, some members called, and I really appreciate that. I'd also like to thank Deputy Minister Majola and Director General Lionel October, who took responsibility to do the presentation at very short notice, and they did a great job, and I must say that they had very limited time to prepare with me being unable to attend. So thank you to them. I should also, before turning to the matters before the committee, say that I've just heard now about Honorable Cuthbert's paternity leave, and I would like to extend my warm congratulations to him for the new addition to the family. And it's always a joyful occasion, a birth, and what it means not only to a family but to all of us. I remember in my previous life as a trade unionist, many years ago, we first raised the idea of maternity leave for women who were pregnant, because at the time, women were fired when they took off for pregnancy. And after much negotiation, businesses began to agree to maternity leave. And when the system settled, we went back to the bargaining table and we raised the issue of paternity leave. And I remember the look of shock in the eyes of so many managers. What is this idea of paternity leave, they asked us. And they were outraged at it. Fortunately, society moves on. Progress is made. Businesses agree to paternity leave. We signed those agreements. And after the advent of democracy in 1994, we embedded those in our labor laws, and South Africans today have protection from unfair dismissal in instances of maternity and paternity leave. And so Honorable Cuthbert should really enjoy the time with the family. It's a very special time. It's one that all of us remember for the rest of our lives. I've been briefed, Chairperson, on the outcome of the discussion, the last committee meeting on Friday. And I understand that in addition to making the presentation, both Deputy Minister Majola and DG October very kindly also took a number of questions, and they responded to some of the questions and indicated that there were some that they believe would be were helpful for me to have an opportunity to respond to. So I really appreciated that I have this moment now to respond to the specific questions raised at the meeting, to provide some additional comments on the matters that were put in the presentation that we prepared, but also perhaps to elaborate a little bit on it in light of the address by the President on Sunday evening, which of course came after the session with the committee. I should reflect that the last committee meeting was only Friday past. And since the data that we had tabled at that meeting that reflected the extent of infections and fatalities, people who died, the number of infections have grown further, and the number of people who passed away, too, very sadly have grown. I am advised that since the last committee meeting, so I'm taking the Thursday data before the Friday session of the committee, something of the order of 112 people have passed away very sadly, and I'm sure the committee would want to join me in passing condolences to the families. It appears that on that Thursday night before our committee meeting, a two-day-old baby had also passed away. There have been stories of other young persons who have been infected, and I heard a story on the radio about a nine-year-old boy that had passed away. What it does, these statistics, is they underlie the importance and seriousness of the issues we're dealing with. It's about saving lives and protecting livelihoods. Being able to do both of those, to have South Africans who place their trust in public representatives, that we do everything in our power to save lives, because human life is sacred, and also to respond to the need to protect livelihoods. And I hope that in the period ahead, we can do much more on both fronts. It's a careful balance that we need to strike as we open up, that on the one hand, we need to have a vigorous economy to generate wealth and resources and create jobs, because those are critical in the fight against COVID-19. And at the same time, to do so in a manner that does not result in the unavoidable deaths in people who otherwise would be with us passing away. We've learned from other countries. One of the honorable members raised the question previously whether we are learning from the experience of others. And that's been one important area of focus, trying to see what has worked elsewhere in the world, what has not worked, what can we learn. And the speech by other people, important shift, a shift from a period of our risk approach that was focused on keeping as many people at home, encouraging everybody to stay at home so that we don't move the virus around, that the vectors of transmission are limited and reduced. And we've gone from that, and we've shifted now to making the workplace themselves safer. I guess one could say from strict regulation in the early days when we needed to massively dampen down the transmission, the spread of the virus, the speed with which it spread, to a more flexible and collaborative approach. And the question really could be asked, why have we made the shift? And the shift, honorable members and chairperson, has been made because on the one hand, we've now had a consistent set of evidence that the inflection curve has been flattened. We've not been able to eliminate the spread of infection. In fact, honorable members will know that the level of infection is rising, but the peak point of that infection, the point at which there would be the greatest pressures and stresses on the healthcare system, has reached out by, it appears, at least a few months. And that gives us greater opportunity to do more on the opening of the economy. There's also more knowledge in society, among South Africans, young and old, about the danger of the virus and about the need for us to take individual steps, from wearing of a mask to sanitizing regularly to doing all the other things, maintaining social distance. There's been progress with businesses. We've worked closely with a number of businesses, and they've introduced measures at the workplace that have assisted to mitigate and to manage people traveling and people being at work. We've had, I guess one could say, a trial run of thousands upon thousands of workplaces. More than 100,000 workplaces had already introduced a range of measures. And in the early days, and even as recently as last week, they were working with us to see how they can improve those measures. In addition to that, we've had progress with strengthening our healthcare system. Some of it has been in the public healthcare, others have been in private health. But one of the most important areas have been a greater capacity to form partnerships. We've used the space that was created now in the regulations after I had issued the exemption in terms of the Competition Act for public and private healthcare providers to collaborate. We've also had businesses in some cases stepping forward and helping, and they include what the president had outlined in his speech on Sunday, Volkswagen in the Eastern Cape, using an unused part of the factory and beginning to set up what will eventually be 4,000 beds that would be available for people who need treatment. It's not the only company. Isuzu has also assisted by making available their engineering and maintenance teams, and they've gone into public hospitals, refurbished it, improved the workflow, and ensured that we can get more people at work who are infected. They are able now to be cared for in the public health system. And these are just a few examples that I can give in the discussion with the auto sector about a week ago. They indicated to me a number of other measures like that. And finally, we've made progress with securing some critical stocks that are required and expanding the level of screening and testing in the society. So using all of this, it's given us a greater level of confidence that we can now move to a more flexible approach, and one that still requires a significant focus on containing the virus, but with a bigger range of tools. Early on, we needed to use one blunt tool, which is a strict lockdown. It's very effective in containing the virus, but because it's a blunt tool, it also causes collateral damage. It has an effect, a very significant effect on the economy, and we now have a set of sharper tools that are available. As we reopen, and the president outlined the framework for the reopening on Sunday night, in the next day or so, we hope we would be able to make the regulations available and the full extent of what would apply at different in different instances would be clearer. But Honorable Mantash asked the question at the last meeting that I missed, which is, can the regulations enable hot food to be available through drive-throughs and measures like that? In fact, Honorable Mantash, I should indicate that that we've made good progress, that that hot food should now be enabled more widely, and that it would not only be for instances of drive-throughs and curbside delivery, but more generally hot foods subject to sanitation and health protocols would be available much more widely. It would include that the bigger and small takeaway stores would also be able to open. None of this would be for sit-down purposes, but it would be for delivery so that people are able to consume the food at home. Honorable Yako asked and pointed to the challenges that the furniture industry faces. Now, that's it's a very labor-intensive sector. It's one that's important in the economy. And it is one where we're trying to deepen the level of localization. And in the new framework that has been announced by the president, furniture factories as well as furniture stores would also be opening. So I make those comments because the shift to level three, what one we would regard as an enhanced level three, is a very significant reopening. It would enable something of the order of 7 to 8 million additional workers to return to work. And with that comes, on the one hand, greater economic activity, more goods and services that are produced, which will help to get the economy going, grow our GDP, and begin the slow process, but important process, of repairing the economic damage that our country and so many economies across the world are facing now. At the same time, on the other end, if we have as many people re-entering the economy, there are new risk points. So we're working hard with industry and with trade unions to see how we can reduce the risks that South Africans will be exposed to in this period. There are risks at the workplace. There are risks in public transport, in public places like shopping malls and elsewhere, in each of these areas, and of course in social activities. So we'll all have to work very closely together to ensure that the shift is done as smoothly and successfully as we can do it. In the course of last week's discussion, a number of members commented, I'm advised, on the importance of personal protective equipment. I'm told that Honorable Yako raised the issue, as well as Honorable Mbuyani. And as we shift to level three, this becomes even more important. When you stay at home and you only with your family, the importance of personal protective equipment is for those limited instances when you leave the house. But as we all now begin to prepare for level three, where we will, on a daily basis, most South Africans will be leaving their home for work, and an increasing number of people for other activities relating to shopping and obtaining medical and other support. The barrier that we have of our house is removed. And so the barrier that we need to create around ourselves is with personal protective equipment. So to both honorable members, you've I think, put the spotlight on this issue. And an important tool in our fight is therefore to expand this personal protective equipment, PPEs, not only for society at large, but also in particular for healthcare workers. Traditionally, before the COVID crisis, we've had several local manufacturers of medical personal protective equipment. But these were modest numbers because the market demand was limited. And since the lockdown, We've had to go to those manufacturers and say, how can we help you to expand your production? And we've had to work with other companies that don't produce personal protective equipment and say to them, what can you do to repurpose your business so that you are able, in fact, to produce these kind of necessary goods? We now have more than 20 producers that have not traditionally made PPEs for the medical field or are currently in production or about to get into production. And that's helped us to boost the quantity of products that we have available. And I'd like to talk through that at the moment. But they include a range of products like what the committee had spoken of previously, masks, but also surgical gloves and gowns and scrubs. And increasingly, we're looking at the issue of ventilators. On gown manufacturing, to illustrate that, we were able to work with the existing manufacturers to ramp up the manufacture of this year in South Africa from about 600,000 units a month by an additional 1.4 million units a month. So this is quite a significant step up in what needs to be done. Of course, the most visible symbol of the PPEs are the face masks. And the most significant part of the face mask is to make sure that medical personnel have these specialized masks, that what is loosely called surgical masks. It would be some honorable members would have spoken in the past about the N95 masks or the FFP2 masks. And at the beginning of the lockdown, honorable members, we had six manufacturers who were producing about 6.5 million masks a month. And we've been steadily increasing this number. And by June and July, as some of the machines that have been ordered from abroad land in South Africa and they test it and they put to full production, that number is going up. In fact, every month. Now in May, we're already significantly higher than we were at the start of the lockdown. And we're looking by July to have be producing more than 10 million masks a month. And with additional manufacturers coming online. Some of these would be producers like U-Mask, which I'm advised is owned and run by young black entrepreneurs. There are other South African-owned companies like Greenline and Quality Safety and a company called North Safety and Respitech. They are also South African affiliates of large global companies, because we're also looking at the expertise that exists elsewhere. And so a company like 3M, which is a company that is present in many markets across the world. In addition to the surgical masks, which of course is very important to what we do, we also have focused on the production of face masks that are made of cloth. And I have reached out to the clothing industry early in the lockdown to say that we needed to have the production capabilities of our shop floors repurposed. And they've done an excellent job in starting up again. Today, more than 400 small companies and large firms say that they are ready to produce cloth face masks. Many of them are already producing it, and honorable members are no doubt buying some of these in the retail outlets. And as they ramp up, they will soon get to the ability to produce about 60 million masks a month. So those production lines are already running, and people have sent me photographs of workers at work stitching these masks. And in addition to, of course, producing the masks, they also generate an income during the lockdown for workers and for manufacturers while the economy gets ready for level three. So I think that the point that has come up from honorable members that we need to make sure that we focus on local capabilities is important. Of course, the DTIC job is principally to help support and facilitate the production. There are other critical areas where the National Department of Health and National Treasury is working on the procurement policies to buy these products and get them into our public hospitals. And retailers are placing orders directly with companies in the industry so that when we go to our shops, we are able to buy these masks. So I've taken a bit of time, honorable members, to take one example and to say that's the level of detail that we need to put in place to be able to address the work that needs to be done. Incidentally, while I focus particularly on PPEs, it's as important to ensure that the basic supply of food and medical equipment and medical supplies are also available. And so I've just given a details snapshot on one area. Within the next few days, we will be providing publicly more details of the work we've done to produce a local set of CPAPs, which is a kind of ventilating machine. There's a range of machines that are used from the AmbuBags to the nasal cannula to the CPAPs, right through to the more invasive ventilators that are used when patients get to the ICU. And I have, in fact, one prototype that the technical team has been looking at, and they sent me a sample of it, which I'm just indicating to the committee, but we'll make more of the detail of this available publicly as soon as we've gone through all the processes of identifying the bidders that will be producing the products. I want to turn next to the fact that the medical and PPE areas is, as well as food production, is one part of a health response, but they're also an economic response. And so opportunities to localize is very important, particularly to give smaller businesses an opportunity to come into production, because that enables more of the resources that we have available in the state to be available more broadly. It helps our broader transformation goals, because we want to build an inclusive economy. Even in a difficult period like this, economic inclusion and transformation is absolutely critical. And of course, we want to make sure that we get money circulating in local communities as actively as possible. The economic impact of the pandemic has been a feature of discussion. A number of honorable members raised questions. I am advised that Honorable Mulder, and thank you, Honorable Mulder, for the good wishes that you conveyed. I appreciate that. That Honorable Mulder was quite concerned about the impact of lockdown on the economy, and he wanted to ensure that we know that there's a dynamic link between the reopening of the economy and the ability to deal with poverty and hunger. And it's something that I think we will all share. And Honorable Mulder, I'm sure, would have taken careful note of the comments by the President that indicates that we've gone for a very significant reopening of the economy. In the course of that discussion, Honorable McPherson had also raised the issue around the impact on GDP, and he referred to what I would assume to be a media article on what was called thumb-sucking of the economic impact. And I want to perhaps mention to honorable members present here today that we constantly update the forecasts and projections on the economic impact. From day one, it was clear to us that this would have a very, very significant impact on the economy, that a pandemic of this nature would cause significant economic devastation. And the only question has been what the scale was of it and which sectors of the economy would be most immediately affected. Some of these matters, of course, came up. I should also point out that in the presentation at the last meeting, we tabled additional information on projections on the GDP, and there's no question that the impact will be very significant. It's regrettable that the article that the Honourable Member referred to perhaps did not fully or adequately capture the comments that we had made, and I would be happy to send the Honourable Member the letter that was sent to the editor of the newspaper subsequently by the department spokesperson, which set out and corrected the matter. And the letter also indicates that, in fact, I was given a set of propositions. One of it is that the lockdown costs 13 billion rand a day. And of course, the question is, how does one get to 13 billion rand a day? And it was done simply by taking the size of the GDP and dividing it by 365 days a year. And in the letter, I think we make the point that that's simply a guesstimate that does not take into account that key sectors of the economy were working during the lockdown, and that accordingly, the story did not contextualize the reply adequately. But I think aside from those kind of important caveats, if the question is, will the pandemic have a very, very significant impact on the economy? The answer is an unequivocal yes. In South Africa and in the rest of the world, we've seen now the numbers being produced elsewhere on the economic devastation. Many have said that this will be the sharpest downturn in the global economy since at least the Great Depression of the 1930s, that was triggered by very significant problems in Wall Street in 1929, and subsequently, of course, that was transmitted to the real economy across the world, and it led to a reduction, not just a slowdown in economic growth, but a massive reduction in global wealth. And respected economists across the world are saying that we've got to brace ourselves for something of a similar magnitude. So we're looking constantly at this to see what the position is.
In two minutes, Minister, will allow then the engagement by the members. 2 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chair. So perhaps let me then link it to another question that was asked. And that question is about trade. And I would like to say that from our point, one of the most critical things is to ensure that as we resume trade, that we deepen our own levels of localization. Cuthbert, not with us today, had raised the question at the last meeting about a statement that some WTO members had put together on global supply chains, and he had asked why South Africa had not been a signatory to the statement. And very briefly, in the remaining few minutes, I would like to indicate that the majority of WTO members have not signed that statement. And we've taken the view as countries on the African continent that we're working on a statement which provides a more developmental approach, that in a period like this, countries have to prioritize local jobs, local industry, and to do so in instances where human life is affected, such as with the production of critical medical supplies and food supplies, and that our key responsibility now is to the immediate neighbors and our own citizens. So we're working closely with other African countries in dealing with these issues. Perhaps, Chairperson, as I round off, in the course of the discussion, I know there were a range of other issues that came up on transformation, on protecting jobs, on economic stimulus and localization, matters of e-commerce and stakeholder engagement, as well as concerns about what is the rationale behind many of the regulations and thinking of government. I would be happy to share thinking with us, with the committee. I'm going to pause now, Chair, so that there can be an opportunity for some engagement. And if you would be kind enough to let me then come back to some of these issues in a few minutes, having heard some of the comments of committee members, that would help to sharpen the questions that have been put to me. So I recognize some additional questions have been asked. I'm ready to share with the committee those thoughts, but in view of the time, I'm going to pause here and come back to them. Thank you, Chair.
Wonderful. Thank you, Minister. Can I ask, Andre, I'm sure I'll see the hands raised by members. We can just go through the list.
We have Mr. Mbuyani at the moment, Chair, and Ms. Mutahung, Chair.
Okay. Let's have Mbuyani. Honorable Mbuyani, it's unmute and talk. Okay, can I actually then ask Mutahung?
Thanks, Chair, and good afternoon, Minister. I would like to thank the Minister with a very informative briefing. I have only one question, Minister. Has the government monitored the infection rate in any sectors of the economy? And how does this compare to general population? Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Mbuyane, are you connected? If not, can I just check from Secretariat, is there any other hand coming out?
No other hand at the moment, Chair. We can proceed with the Minister's response, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, the Secretariat has missed my hand.
Oh. Yeah, there's quite a number of people that have pointed out in the chat that they want to speak.
Please, if the Secretariat missed it, please just help him so that we can do it. I pick up Hermans and McPherson. But can I just check with you, Secretariat, what's up?
Chair, there appear to be a challenge with my chat. I don't pick it up, Chair, but I'll speak to ICT section, Chair, to address it, because I don't see it on my side, Chair.
Okay, for now, I think I picked up
Mr. McPherson and Ms. Hermans.
And
Mr. Thring.
Thring, in that order. Hermans.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Minister, for that briefing, and we are very happy to see that you are well on the road to recovery. We must all look after ourselves in this trying times that we are going through. So we pray for a healing hand on you and all committee members. We see, Minister, some incidents of grandstanding by some committee members on the issues of government's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. What I want to know, Minister, in your opinion, is the impact of such actions on government's efforts to walk the very thin line between lives and livelihoods? Because the bottom line is that we want to save lives, because a life lost is never regained. Then I asked Minister a question of the DG, which was not in your responses, and maybe it's considered to be an administrative matter, but we know that there are many industries that are under severe distress, but the sugar industry was in that state even before this pandemic hit us. So we know that you're very busy with many, many other tasks, but we ask you to please not forget that the regulations expire at the end of June 2020. And that this committee had to note that this committee has been walking a very long road to expedite transformation in the sector. And we know that these regulations will allow for the inclusion of SAFTA into full participation in the sugar industry. So just some thoughts on your part on that matter, please, Minister. Thank you.
Honourable McPherson. McPherson?
Yeah, thanks very much. The internet connection is not great, so if it cuts out, I may turn off my camera. A couple of things. Minister, why are you not allowing submissions on the Level 3 regulations? This would be out of step with what previously took place when we went from Level 4 to Level 5. And there was an opportunity for submissions for members of the public to make their voice heard. Why is that being departed from, in this instance, moving to Level 3? My second question is, do you support the smoking ban? There is a study that has been put out that shows that 90% of all smokers have continued to buy cigarettes during the lockdown, which means that the smoking ban has been totally and utterly ineffective and forced people to buy cigarettes on the black market, costing the government's ability to collect tax up to the tune of 1.5 billion rand a year. Can you take us through the rationale behind that and whether you believe that that is fair to retailers and to consumers who buy cigarettes? My third question is, you have spoken about the ability to circulate money in communities, particularly those of working class communities. Why is it taking the department and yourself so long to enact Section 11 of the National Credit Act? And why are micro lenders not allowed to operate currently under Level 4 if they service that lower income market, and will they be allowed to operate under Level 3? And then my penultimate question, personal care services seem to be a real outlier in not being allowed to work. These are hairdressers that are found in many communities across the country. They work out of their homes, out of garages, and by and large, work to sustain their families. What is the rationale behind not allowing them to work? And how are they more at risk than, say, someone working in a supermarket? And then finally, I note that it seems like, and I say seems like because the regulations haven't been published and we know how these things can change, was the whole drama around the regulations around clothing and what you may buy and how you should market, display, and wear those clothes, was it all worth it when you are going to be allowed to buy them anything and everything now in stores in just under a couple of days' time? And I'd really like to know who came up with the regulation around how you must wear your clothes, because I don't believe that it was the retailers that made that suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Thring. Is it Thring?
Yes, Chairperson, then okay. Ms. Mantashe afterwards.
Okay. Thring, Honourable Thring.
Thank you, Chair. Good to see Minister back, and again, just wish you well in your recovery, but good to see that you are on that road. I raised the issue in the last meeting with the DG on the issue of beneficiation, and One of the things that I asked for is, and I know that we spoke about the fuel cell plants and so on, but one of the things that I asked was whether we are able to get a comprehensive list of all of the beneficiation programs that we actually have, as well as a list of projected beneficiation. I think certainly from our view, we believe that in terms of the number of jobs that we are seeing lost, beneficiation is able to create, if we beneficiate our raw materials, is able just to create so much more jobs if we have an intensive push in that particular direction. My second question was with regards to the e-commerce, and it's good to see that there's an unlocking of the restrictions that were placed on e-commerce. But again, maybe if we could just have some comment in terms of how do you see, where is that kind of going? And I may have missed it, but I do think that it's going to be section in level three, further restrictions being removed with regards to e-commerce. Then I think my third question would be with regards to the PPEs. There's a huge concern, and you mentioned, you know, companies are now ratcheting up the production, but I'm concerned about what's taking place within our schools in particular, where some schools are, from what we are hearing on the ground, refusing to open because they do not have sufficient PPEs at the schools. The government has not provided, and I know that's a Department of Education mandate, but these are the things that we are hearing on the ground. So what is the communication, the seamless communication from DTI C to education and so on, to ensure that the PPEs are actually going to get onto the ground where they are needed, and how is that going to be done? And then I think finally, I broached a question with regards to value chains that have been disrupted as a result of COVID-19. And as a result, we have seen, as a result of that disruption, another opportunity has opened just in terms of our investment and our partnerships in Africa, and in particular with the Africa Free Trade Agreement. So how do you see that panning out, the opening up of new value chains and moving away from those that may actually cause harm to the economy? Thank you.
Okay, next one.
Chair, Ms. Mantashe, followed by Mr. Mulder.
Mantashe, then Mulder after. Mantashe, honorable.
And good afternoon to the minister. Chair, we want to walk in the steps of the minister in sending our condolences to the families of those people who have succumbed to the pandemic in the last few days. Chair, I have a few questions, one or two questions. That we are now going to level three and very, very difficult conditions. Might as well accept it, but our concern is that the numbers in some provinces are hiking, Chair. What does government plan to do? We want to know, Chairperson, when Minister talks of localization, I would imagine he also speaks to the benefit that small businesses will have of what is the word that he repurpose, which provinces have been given such a mandate to talk to companies to repurpose their businesses, because I see unions are up in arms because their members in hospitals do not have the PPEs, including masks. Has this been communicated to all provinces for small businesses to repurpose their business? And that would be my question, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thanks very much.
Mr. Mulder.
Honorable Mulder.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Minister, it's good to see you recovered and back again. I've just got one short comment and a question. When you appeared before the committee, the first time you responded to a comment that I made that indeed the future will look different than the past and what we've experienced till now. And I'm a person that believes that we live in the present and that we have to look to the future. Me and my party is not trying to create a better past. We can indeed say that the future ain't what it used to be. And that is what I want to concentrate on. I want to ask you if you're willing to engage with the Freedom Front Plus on contributions toward creating a better trade and industry future in South Africa. I believe we're going to have to spend a whole lot of time engaging on that in future. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair, can we try Mr. Mbuyane again, Chair?
Oh, Honorable Mbuyane, I'm not sure if you're available, connected, because I think you might be cut. Honorable Mbuyane? Honorable Mbuyane? Okay. So let's proceed and back to Minister. Minister, I thought it would be important that we actually just make sure that at least we allow members to engage with yourself. And I'm sure you'll be able to take off for you. And
yes, Chair.
Is it Mbuyane?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, Mbuyane. Floor is yours. Honorable Mbuyane.
Chair, may I ask Mr. Mbuyane to put it on the chat, Chair? Then we can forward it to the okay. Minister.
Okay. Thank you, Minister. Can we actually ask you to actually continue in the engagement as questions and comments were made by members?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'd like to appreciate the warm comments about that the number of members have made. If I can go straight to the questions that were raised from Honorable Motong raised the question on whether we monitor the infection rate in specific sectors and how that compare with the general population. And the answer, Honorable Motong, is we are beginning to look at particularly critical parts of the economy where it is absolutely key that we maintain supply lines in order to save lives.
Chairperson, thank you.
Are you back? Sorry, Minister, it's Honorable Mbuyane. We're struggling to make a connection. I'm not sure. Mbuyane, are you connected? If you are connected, can you actually speak? Otherwise, there was already an option made by Secretary to say, put it on the chat, we'll pick it up from there. But if you can speak, can you speak now? Sorry, Minister, if we can allow the member. Honorable Mbuyane? Honorable Mbuyane, second time. Honorable Mbuyane, third time, we pass.
Okay, I'll give him a call.
Okay. All right. Can we then allow Minister, can you proceed? Sorry for that. Unmute, Minister, unmute.
There we are. Thank you very much, Chairperson. So I'd like to start with Honorable Motong's question by saying, yes, indeed, we are beginning to monitor rates of infection and critical downtime in key sectors of the economy. And immediately when we were in lockdown five, at that stage we had not yet even called it lockdown five, we reached out to the food sector to begin to see the impact of infections in food supply and to get them to identify risk measures that they can put in place to lower infection and to ensure that we maintain these supply lines, because we all need food in the end. We need medical supplies to be available. More recently, we have looked at sectors like retail, because that is an area where there's been a very significant exposure of workers to people more broadly, to the public who come and buy goods, and so in that context, we've been trying to identify where the hotspots are and what is happening in the retail sector. The last data that we looked at perhaps a day or two ago showed that if I just take the five top retailers, to make it simple, the big grocery retailers, they had an infection rate that was quite significant, in the sense that more than 1,000 retail workers had been diagnosed as being COVID positive. And that was close to 10 times the rate of infection of the population as a whole. And it's because, and I want to, and I think it's an important issue to see as we move to level three, how we manage the risk issues. I have heard comments from commentators that says, well, you know, as long as you do social distancing and you do hand sanitizers and masks, you can basically address the risk. And it is true that these instruments are necessary because they help to reduce the risk. But the risk is still there as long as people are moving, and that is the hard lesson of COVID-19 across the world. So if I take the retail sector as an example, in spite of the fact that they've put in place masks that workers wear, in spite of the fact that there is hand sanitizers being used and that they're maintaining social distance, you still have a rate of infection that is almost 10 times higher than the national average. And with that comes the risk, of course, that if we were to find that kind of level across the country, then it will place the healthcare system under enormous strain. For that reason, we've gone for a more cautious approach, valuing life, placing life at the center of what we need to do, because as Honorable Hermans said so clearly, and I took note of what she said, that the life lost is never regained. For that reason, we need to make sure that we bed down our systems and that we move step by step through the different levels as we get a greater sense of preparedness by industry. Moving on to Honorable Hermans's questions. Honorable Hermans raised the question of grandstanding in the public arena. And of course, grandstanding, I think, as a phenomenon, is well known in society and in politics. Sports stars, when they are in a football stadium, will sometimes do a bit of grandstanding and get applause. But in our case, we're working with very serious issues. This is about lives and livelihoods. And I think all South Africans look to us as leaders in government, in parliament, in provinces, in local municipalities, to apply themselves diligently and constantly to trying to do the right thing. And sometimes there are difficult choices that one has to make, difficult choices that a household has to make, family members have to make, workers have to make, entrepreneurs and businesses have to make, political decision makers have to make. And I would hope that we can do these things and have grace and generosity as we deal with it. There are many things where there is no textbook, and we develop the answers by learning from others. And as the president said, and I think it's important that we emphasize this, no one has a monopoly of wisdom. So really my appeal would be grandstanding plays no role in saving a life, and the temptation for the immediate soundbite and the quickly released press statement fades after a while. But a life that is saved is a life that can contribute to the economy and to our society and to a family. So we really have to work together as a country on these issues. The question was also raised by Honorable Hermans on the sugar industry, and the point is well made, Honorable Hermans. As you know, that the agreement originally was due to expire the end of March. We did a three-month extension of the agreement to enable us to put in place the measures that would indeed help to put a five-year agreement in place. And so I hope that the work that is being done with the sugar industry will enable that. If we have not completed the work in time, then we may need to look for another short extension, but we're certainly looking for a longer agreement and a longer-term legal framework for the sector. What underpins that is a recognition that the industry had enormous challenges before COVID-19. And so we worked hard last year. We had great levels of dedication from many of the members of the sugar industry, the small farmers, the larger farmers, the millers, as well as the retailers and food users. And we've got a pact, a set of commitments that everybody has signed off on. And we hope to have a formal signing ceremony when all the lockdown restrictions have been removed and we're able to do that publicly. But I am happy to indicate a high degree of consensus was expressed at the meetings that we had a few months ago at the start of the lockdown, and that the industry is committed to working together to address its challenges. Its challenges, it's a growth challenge, but it's also a transformation challenge, because we need to ensure that this viable, strong, and dynamic small-scale farming in the sugar industry, and that we're also able to diversify the industrial value chains into which sugar goes, and to enable a greater range of crops in the sugar plantations and sugar fields of particularly KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, and one or two of the other provinces. So some consideration has been given on both of those. And when we've signed the final agreement, I'm sure there will be an opportunity to brief the committee in detail on those. But your point is absolutely well made, Honorable Hermans, and we'll be dealing with that. Honorable McPherson has raised a number of questions, starting with a question on submissions on level three. Honorable McPherson may recall that when we released a document as government for public comment, we did not just release the level four framework. We also released the entire framework from level five right through to level one. And while we were most keen to get immediately comments on level four, those were the most immediate ones, the comments were open for all the levels. And in fact, we received very significant comments from the public, from businesses, trade unions, political players and others on not only level four, but also level three. And indeed, I should say level two and one. So we had an opportunity immediately at the end of level five lockdown to incorporate some of those insights and comments and suggestions into level four. In a number of cases, these were done before the level four regulations were published. Some of the suggestions were done subsequently with additional amendments to level four. And then a final set were done in preparation for an extended level four. When we looked at the data that I've indicated earlier in my reply, the president and the command council was of the view that we could move more swiftly to level three. And in the light of that, we then took the public comments and we've taken them into account in fashioning the level three approach. And so in order to move as swiftly to level three as possible, we've been working now on the regulations. As soon as they are completed, they will be published, and we would then be able to get an opportunity for companies to have some lead time to prepare for the new arrangement, which would come into effect from effectively the 1st of June. So I hope I've given a little bit of context that, in fact, the public comments that we received went not only to level four, but also to level three. In addition to that, we've also had political parties giving us comments specifically on level three. And these comments have also been considered and thought through by ourselves. On the smoking ban, Honorable McPherson has raised the issue of the smoking ban. The president spoke on the matter and provided a little bit of context on it. I am aware that I am in a parliamentary process at the moment. And as honorable members will know, that there is a long-standing convention in parliament that when a matter is before the courts, that we generally seek to refrain from reflecting on the merits of that matter. So I am advised that the cigarette matter is still subject to court proceedings. And in the light of that, I am advised that it may be more appropriate to refrain from reflecting on the merits of that matter. And I'm sure honorable members will be aware of the guidance Parliament provides on these matters. In respect of the circulating of money in communities and the enacting of Section 11 of the National Credit Act, we've taken into account a range of considerations. The first is, for a number of weeks, we had been working to encourage the banking sector as a whole to extend terms to consumers and to small businesses using the exemption that was granted in respect of the Competition Act, because this allows bankers and other financial institutions to come together and agree on things like repayment holidays and other measures to make it possible, number one, for people to obtain additional funding, and secondly, to have some of the burden of payment stretched out to reflect the circumstances we're in. In addition to that, we recognized that the National Credit Act has two provisions. The one provision Honorable McPherson referred to, the other provision is the emergency loan provision. But before we activated that, we spoke to a range of stakeholders on the matter, and we took into account the advice that was coming out. And the advice was that in a number of cases, banks were not holding back because of concerns with the National Credit Act. They were holding back because they were worried about the ability of consumers, small businesses, and so on, to repay. And it's that realization that led us to work with the commercial banks and the Reserve Bank, among others, to put in place the credit guarantee scheme, the 200 billion rand credit guarantee scheme, that gives banks to some degree a greater comfort that they will be able to obtain backing from government in the event that some of the loans that they make in the period ahead are not capable of being paid back. So that was for us the big change, because that's where, from the finance sector, it appears the biggest challenge was not the provisions of the National Credit Act, but in fact, the ability of consumers to pay back. In addition to that, in our consultation with the National Credit Regulator, they've brought to our attention some challenges with activating Section 11. And in particular, their concerns are that even in this period, one should avoid reckless lending that places vulnerable consumers at great risk to their limited assets being taken away from them, and also places the system itself at risk. So the advice that they've given is that it would be more appropriate for the emergency loan provisions to be utilized, and it's their view that it has the same effect, but it is more circumscribed, and therefore it's more appropriate in the circumstances. And in fact, last week, the National Credit Regulator issued a formal notice, I think it's in the form of a practice note, to industry on the emergency loan provisions. So taken together, the support for small businesses that the Small Business Development Department has put in place, with strong support from the DTIC and DG October and the team and the DMs, and I worked very early on to see how we could support that, plus the support that the banks are now getting with the backstop, the credit guarantee, plus the actions by the credit regulator that have been put in place now, as well as the relaxation of certain provisions of the Competition Act to enable financial institutions to work together in providing relief to indebted consumers and small businesses, I should indicate. All of these taken together are now a significant response to deal with the problem of support for those who are vulnerable, and to ensure that we circulate money in the community. And in that context, an honorable member had raised on the 1st of May whether the micro lenders would be brought into the framework, and I'm really I'm able to report today that in terms of the announcement that the President has made, the micro lenders and microfinance providers will be able to operate now in level 3. On personal care services, Honorable McPherson raised the question that personal care services are something of an outlier, as he put it in the regulations, and he asked the question, what is the rationale behind it? And I'd like to start with the rationale. So first, not all personal care services are covered by the limitation on activities. It would be some personal care services. So let me take an example. Those personal care services where there is not very close personal contact between the consumer and the supplier of the service would basically be able to start on the 1st of June. Let me take an example of dry cleaning services. They would be regarded as personal care services, and they would be treated in the same way as is the case with supermarkets. Because like a supermarket where you bring your food, you place it on the area set aside for the cashier processes it, and then you take your goods. Similarly, when you take clothes to a dry cleaner, it's basically the same logic that applies. Where we've had greater challenges, where the risks are higher, is for those personal care services that have to be rendered with physical contact between the supplier of the service and the consumer of the service. The best example would be things like those who do nails and tattoos and the cutting of hair, those kind of services. And the, what the president indicated on Sunday is that a number of those services would not be covered in level three. At the same time, we are seeking to talk to those, to companies and to entrepreneurs and to small businesses in that sector, because we may be able to do some additional health protocols and additional measures that can be put into place, drawing on the international experience, that would enable even some of those services potentially to restart in level three. So it's really a collaborative approach to recognize there are potentially higher risks, and that many countries across the world have grappled with how to deal with personal services. And it will probably work best to have a step-by-step opening of that sector. I think that covers the personal care service. Then Honorable McPherson raised the issue on clothing, and he says, with the benefit of the announcement that has been made, he asked the question, was it worth it? And he also asked, how did it come about that the list was generated? And I should start, Chairperson, with recognizing that there's been a spirited set of comments, commentary in the society on it, and many sharp comments that have been made also on it. Let me start with the logic of it, because I think it's important that the rationale be something that we share, even though we've now moved beyond it. But at the same time, it's an important question on what was the rationale. Early in the spread of the infection, we had every day or two, we saw a big spike in infection in the early days, just before the lockdown was instituted. And the numbers were doubling every 2-3 days. From the experience of others elsewhere in the world, we recognized that if that exponential rate of increase was to be maintained, it would overwhelm the healthcare system. We would be today where many countries are, with tens of thousands of deaths and enormous numbers of people infected, and we wanted to avoid that. So South Africa followed a model of we moved in fast. We did our lockdown much quicker than many other countries, and we went in hard. We did a harder lockdown than many countries did. And that was based on a concern that there's so much about the virus that we still don't know today, including the impact when that virus spreads in communities with dense urban settlements, people living in informal housing without running water and without sanitation. And when the virus spreads in communities of persons who are HIV positive. And so we needed to take extraordinary steps to try to ensure that we buy ourselves time to deal with this. Now, the relevance of that on clothing is the following. The early decision was that the shops that would be open would be only those selling the most basic goods. And honorable members will remember in this first few weeks, it was really just food and cleaning material and healthcare products that were sold. And later, this was marginally extended to include baby clothes and baby care products more generally. Eventually, we needed to see what was the rest of the package of basic goods. And representations were made to us that with winter coming, it should include winter clothes. And the regulations then needed to deal with this. Now, we could take the view at the time to open all shops and enable South Africans to be able to buy everywhere. But because the focus then was on flattening the curve of infection, slowing the rate down very, very significantly, and given that it's people who spread the virus, because the virus don't move on its own, it's the numbers of people who move that is the key metric. We wanted to ensure that the number of retail stores that are opened should be those selling the most basic goods. I'm told that the estimate of the Retail Federation is that there would be something of the order of 30 to 50,000 small retail shops and places all over the country that just sells clothing alone. So as the onset of winter began to manifest itself in temperature, the decision of the NCCC was winter clothes should be included. And that's all we did, is to say winter clothes should be included. The challenge then came about that retailers themselves did not have clarity on what is meant by winter clothes. And our original approach was, it really is left to them, that just as we don't spell out many other things in the regulations, we leave it to them. Consumers were faced with the challenge that different retailers were interpreting winter clothes in different ways. And retailers themselves were saying, well, my competitor is selling this. Is this within the definition of winter clothes? So what we then did, we received a request from the Retail Association that there should be a common list that government publishes. And the Retail Association said to us, we have an idea of what we think should go into that list. And they compiled the list, they send the list to us. The list was circulated more widely. We tried to secure the view of other stakeholders on the list. And in the end, that list, as had been developed by the industry, was simply given effect by way of a regulation. It's not a list, I should say, of what people should wear. Government can't prescribe that. It was really an attempt to give clarity to retailers so that they have a common frame from which they work. We did something similar with the car sector. They wanted to have clarity on how to reopen retail car sales. And we said to them, we certainly would be keen to have your thoughts, your views on it. And they crafted a set of very detailed measures of how consumers would go about getting to the to buy new cars, what would be the position in showrooms, how cars would be delivered, all of that. And similarly, all they did was they presented it to us, we circulated it for any advice and comment, and we published those in the form of a direction. So I think in this one, this instance, we've had to just take it on the chin that there's been a range of views on the matter, that no doubt about it, we could have communicated better that this list is one that had been developed by the industry to give greater clarity to competitors about what is meant in regulations about winter clothing. And I'm, of course, Honorable McPherson, delighted that we're able to open up retailing more widely so that we can get more economic activity going. But I do recognize the greater risks. Now, one of the questions, Chairperson, that has been asked to us is, well, why did the regulations not just permit every retailer to sell whatever they had in their store? Why was it necessary to put particular products? And I think there were two challenges. The one is, in that period of the risk-adjusted strategy, the intention was to limit movement of people out of our homes to the maximum extent possible. whilst recognizing the importance of people getting all the basics that we all need, food and so on. And so given that that logic and the need to achieve that outcome, a limited list was published. Some retailers said to us, well, we sell food, could we also sell clothing? Because in our stores we have clothing. And it were other retailers who said to us, well, it would be extremely unfair if a store that sells both food and clothing is open to sell clothing, but we who only sell clothing cannot do so. You will basically destroy our business, meaning it will have the impact of us having to close our businesses. Many thousands of workers would be put in the street, and if anything, the impact of COVID-19 on livelihoods would be even worse. And so in matters like this, government tries to play a facilitative role. We heard all of the different points of view, and we had to take the view that at the time to enable one retailer to sell the full range, but limit specialty stores from doing so would be a challenge and would have a direct impact on livelihoods, and that our objectives here is to try to save lives and protect livelihoods. So I hope that that gives a little bit of context to the winter clothes issue, and that we can recognize all of our learnings from the experience, and certainly take some of the public comment and the concerns to heart. Honorable Tring, first, thank you very much for the comments that you have made. I think you've put your finger absolutely on a critical opportunity for South Africa, and that is beneficiation. We're a big producer of raw materials for the world, and our raw materials go and produce jobs elsewhere in the world. It does, however, take more than administrative fiat to be able to convert natural resources to manufactured goods and to value-added goods. And therefore, your request that we have a list of existing projects is one that I would like the department to put together. And if it is helpful, Honorable Tring, perhaps we even should have a session of the committee on beneficiation. So beneficiation is really the process of taking any of the raw materials and adding value here in South Africa. So what have we done so far on it? You've pointed to the fuel cell technologies where we've supported the development of the platinum fuel cell technologies, and there are some pilot projects now underway. The key issue there is, can we get the price of energy that is produced through fuel cells to be competitive with that of other technologies? And that's what the projects are about. I think they have shown that you can have energy generated from fuel cell technologies, but it's a cost issue at the moment. Japan has been leading thinking in what they call the hydrogen economy, using fuel cells, among others, to reimagine a world in which fossil fuels play a significantly smaller role, and the platinum value chain, among others, play a much bigger role. And it offers enormous opportunities for South Africa. But it's not only in platinum that beneficiation is important. By the way, on platinum, South Africa is a producer of catalytic converters, which are the gadgets that essentially go into a vehicle's exhaust system, and that ensures that the emissions are safer. And they use platinum, and we produce probably of the order of about 10% of the world's catalytic converters. But more recently, Honorable Tring, we've been working on scrap metal as a key feedstock for foundries and elsewhere. And we introduced a number of years ago a price preference system to ensure that there's a greater use of local technologies or local scrap metal in South African minimal steel minimals and foundries. More recently, the president announced that we will be looking at an export tax on scrap metal, and COVID-19 interrupted the process of working on this, and we need to get back to it as quickly as possible. Coal, of course, is a big beneficiation program because a lot of South African coal is consumed, in fact, by Eskom. Iron ore, there's more that we can do on iron ore, but there's also a range of other metals from manganese and other products that there are opportunities for beneficiation. The issues are technology, capital, know-how, and product markets. So it is an enormous opportunity, and I would be really keen to engage further on this. If there's one area that we recognize Africa has not realized its potential as a continent, all of us, is we produce what we don't consume. In other words, we produce raw materials which goes to other continents, and we consume what we don't produce. In other words, we buy finished products from other parts of the world, and that has kept Africa poor, and beneficiation is a critical bridge to change that, as is the broader program of African industrialization. Coming to e-commerce, we opened e-commerce in level 4 much more widely, and in level 3 it will expand even further. It's only prohibited goods that would not be covered by e-commerce, and in level 3 the key prohibited good would be the tobacco products that one of the honorable members referred to earlier. So e-commerce comes with many advantages, and I have set out those both to the committee previously and in public statements. But there are challenges with e-commerce that we do need to take into account. Particularly smaller local players are concerned about the impact of e-commerce on their retail businesses. And if we look at the emergence of technologies, it is the wave of the future. But as public representatives, our job is to also help smaller players to embrace these technologies and to see how they can adjust to the waves of technology that is reshaping our world, and that has done so for a century or more in industry. On schools, Honorable Tring, our principal job has been to make sure that South Africa has the productive capacity to be able to have face masks in place. We've changed, we've ensured that in the regulations, it makes it clear it can even be the face cloth masks. And the Department of Health has put on their website even instructions on how we can make these face masks at home. And I've been wearing face masks that people have been making at home, and they work well. But of course, at schools, we also want to make sure that all children do have these face masks. As I indicated, the local industry's ability to produce face masks has been dramatically ramped up. And we now need to just make sure that the procurement systems absorb those numbers. Honorable Mantash raised an absolutely critical point, which is the growing number of infections in particular provinces or metros or districts. It is of great concern to us. And in particular, I looked the other day at the numbers of Cape Town, which is significantly higher than the next highest district. So we do need to work very, very closely with local authorities and find ways of enhancing the measures that have been put in place. Obviously, what has been done to date is not sufficient. And the danger is that the healthcare systems can be overwhelmed and many people die unnecessarily, preventable deaths. And so our job in the period ahead would be to focus a lot more on the hotspots going forward. Spot on, Honorable Mantash, that localization also has to focus on opportunities for small business. And I want to underline that, because beyond the COVID, and perhaps it comes back to a good point raised by Honorable Mulder, that the future will look different. And that different future, Honorable Mulder, is one that we're keen to engage. And thank you for your offer of the FF Plus engaging with us on it. I would be most interested to do so and to hear your thoughts on the matter, because we must learn from the rest of the world. We must learn from our public representatives. We must learn from our own experience, from our manufacturers and entrepreneurs, from our young people. So we really are keen to learn from as many different sources as possible. But part of that different future that we envisage is an economy that's more inclusive. Many more small businesses, many more young people, black young people, white young people, who find opportunity in our economy. Opportunity for women. Women are one half of society and they are underrepresented in the economy. More opportunity for black South Africans as black industrialists, as black retailers, as companies in every part of the economy in which black South Africans have shareholding, have equity, are owners of those businesses. And that's critical because COVID-19 has again reminded us of the fault lines in our economy, that those who are poorest have had to take the hardest hit, and they are the cruelty of COVID-19 is that it has punished them more than others, that they have less resources for healthcare facilities, and that they have less savings to draw on during this difficult period. And so the hopeful South Africa that we need to work together across political parties, across ideological positions, across all of that, it's really to build a South African nationhood in which everybody has economic opportunity. And that means government has to work hard on transformation, that we need an economy that is more broad-based in ownership, but that is also more diversified. As Honorable Tring said, it can't be an economy that does that simply exports raw material to the rest of the world. So for me, transformation embraces all of those different elements. And the future we're looking at must be one in which those opportunities exist in greater numbers for all South Africans. So I'm going to recognize that some good ideas may come out of the engagement with Honorable Mulder and the colleagues from the FF Plus. And similarly, we will get no doubt very good ideas from other public representatives and from South Africans. We've had some great examples of South African innovation where people have taken the challenges of this period and converted it to opportunities. So I finally want to make sure that I spend a few minutes in trying to find the question that Honorable Mbuyani had put to us, and see if I can at least spend a moment or two on those ones, Chairperson.
Okay. Minister, can I just maybe suggest there's Mbuyane and there was also Yako. Can I just allow them to give the closing remarks? Because remember, we're actually hoping that we have regular engagement. And I think for now, it will be important that I invite Yako just to be brief, and then Mbuyane to be brief. Mbuyane first, Minister, and then we take Yako, and then we will actually then have to make sure, because I see your time, you actually, for your next meeting, that we don't actually have to inconvenience you. If you allow me, I'll ask for the two members just briefly, and then actually take the last word, Minister. Mbuyane?
Chair, if I may, Chair?
Yes.
I've seen the questions on the screen now. I've been able to get there. So if I could go straight to Honorable Mbuyane's question.
Sure.
So Honorable Mbuyane's question, as I understand it, relates to transformation in terms of the reimagined industrial policy. And he particularly wanted to see whether we're looking at broad-based black economic empowerment and localization. And he also wanted to get clarity on the risk-adjusted approach on the easing of the lockdown. So on the risk-adjusted approach, I think I've covered that now in my further reply, that we are opening up much more widely. There is a more limited and smaller list of areas that are not yet open, and that we will reach out even to a number of businesses in those areas, like personal services, to see can enhanced measures be put in place. For the large sectors of the economy, like manufacturing and construction and areas like that, that are opening up, we're also looking to see can we get a series of sector undertakings and commitments that will ensure safe workplaces and measures to limit the pressure on public transport. One example would be staggered working hours, where instead of everybody in a large factory starting at 7:30 in the morning, they may be able to have a portion of workers starting at 7, some starting at 8, and others starting at 9 o'clock, so that the pressure on the public transport system is distributed across a wider, longer period, and people don't have to be crammed into taxis, buses, or trains, which is where the risk will be spread. We're also looking with companies to see where can they provide company transport or work with local taxi associations to enhance transport for workers. These are the kind of things to try to de-risk, Honorable Mbuyane, the new approach. On broad-based black economic empowerment and localization, as I indicated in my earlier comments, they're quite fundamental. They're fundamental because even in this COVID-19 period, we have seen enormous hardship to the most vulnerable in our economy, to small players. And so while government has not taken the view that we close the door more broadly to supporting all South Africans, we also want to make sure that we are mindful of the particular difficulties and challenges that small players, particularly smaller black-owned enterprises, are facing in this period, and that we mobilize both our resources as well as public sentiment to a Buy Local campaign, to a Proudly South African campaign, that we support local players actively and strongly. On the question that came from Honorable, I see this question from Honorable Yako, which I would like to say, will the ministry do its due diligence in terms of oversight, or rather, how will the ministry do its due diligence in terms of oversight to make sure companies adhere to health and safety rules? Honorable Yako, critical. So we're going to do it through a number of ways. The one is to work with the trade union movement. There are thousands and thousands of shop stewards across the country, and it's really to work with unions, and I have a virtual meeting with union leaders later today, where we are going to be talking to see how they can both work to educate workers on it, but also to report breaches where companies are not following the protocols, and see what we can do to support those companies to adhere, because lives are at stake here. In addition to that, we have in the Department of Labor and Employment, there are workplace inspectors. The Minister of Employment and Labor has now published a set of directions of what is required at every workplace, and his inspectors are out there checking. So, Honorable Yako, where you pick up examples of breaches or concerns, please do share them with us. They will be helpful in taking the matter forward. Of course, there's also other inspectors that are available in at local level that can all be used to try to see how we work together. It's not a punitive approach. It's a collaborative, flexible approach to see can we work together to enable this. So there are risks, Chair, as I sum up in the period ahead. There are risks in this period, but we recognize that we're going to be living with the virus for a long time. until there is, in fact, an effective vaccination against the virus, a vaccine that's been developed, and the systems to apply that vaccine to everybody or to large numbers of people, we will need to manage with a greater risk management in public transport and at the workplace, in shopping malls, and so on. I think that we've been really heartened by the strong support that South Africans have shown to the measures in the different levels, and much more of the focus will be on creating safer workplaces. I hope I've been able to cover the most essential of the questions, and I have no doubt, Chair, that there's more detail that I can provide in some of these in future engagements with the committee. I do wish to thank the honourable members for the questions that were put, and for this opportunity to subject ourselves to the oversight of the committee. Honourable Yako's point around the department playing an oversight role in industry, we'll also be following up a little bit more on the measures that we can put in place to strengthen reporting and identify very quickly and early on the dangers and challenges with infections on the nation's shop floors. So thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity and for being able to address the committee. I'm going to have to ask for leave of absence so that I can get the system booted up for my next meeting that starts in 3 minutes' time. But I ran a little bit over the 10 to 2 because the questions that were asked were really required a bit more detail than simply a yes or a no. And I thank the members for the thoughtful questions that were put. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Yeah, I think the conclusion on my side will be precisely the point that we will be having to find more time and engage regularly with your office, Minister. So I think on those bases, we'll say let's actually round up today's session and thank you for the time, and be able to actually say we'll try and find more time to be able to continue the discussions that we are actually had today. Thank you very much for your contribution. And we'll then thank you, and you can run in that 3 minutes to the other side. Maybe it's just switching on and off and getting on the other side. Thank you very much, Minister. Okay.
Thanks to all the committee members. Okay. I agree. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much. Okay, can we then actually move over to the Secretariat on the next item?
Chair?
Yes.
Chair, we will proceed to the budget vote report. All members have received it. I think I distributed it on Thursday, the first draft. And in that, we requested that parties submit to the Secretariat any concluding remarks or recommendations for the committee to consider. I only received input from the African National Congress chairperson and not any other member. I think I said I did ask yesterday as well a reminder for other parties, but to date we only received from the African National Congress. I would assume other members will may raise it during the proceedings today. So, Chair, it's up to you how we proceed, because we can put up the report, and then we can then go look at the recommendations like we did last time in concluding remarks and have a discussion around that, Chair. We're in your hands in terms of how we process, Chair.
Well, I will actually suggest that we proceed by actually putting up, we can be able to project the
yes, Chair.
Yeah. So if you can actually project, but maybe we can ask if ever there are comments from parties in terms of actually the submissions on their side. But if ever there's comfort that we proceed on the basis of what we have as a contribution, then we can pick it up from there. Are there any comments from parties on the submission in terms of receiving and actually their inputs? If not, can I ask that maybe we go to the conclusion as projected, and then maybe allow the committee to actually speak to that?
Cheers. If Margot can take it up, that we can see the, I can't see the full first item, Chair, if you can just move it down or up, whatever. Yeah. Chair, this was submitted by the African National Congress. So they indicated the need to put something with regard to the establishment of the new DTIC. We've made a proposal, Chairperson. And obviously, it's for the members now to look at that and see if they support the way we put it down, Chair, and we move from there and get other parties' input on that, Chair.
Okay. So I think that's point number one of the establishment of the new DTIC. If maybe there are actually suggestions from members in terms of what is summarized, can we actually take comments? If not, can we then proceed from the point one to the second point? On the first one, are there any comments, honorable members? So if there's
no from the ACP.
Chair,
yes.
May I ask, I can't see, my chat is not working, Chair, so I won't be able to see which, if any member is raising their hand or anything. So I ask my other colleagues to they can see and to indicate to you if any member is raising their hand or one wishing to make a comment, Chair.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm sure the members are able to see the projection.
Yeah.
Okay. So can I actually then check from one of the members if ever there's any comments on point one, establishment of the new DTIC, with the summary which you've got there. I'm sure you can read through that. Any comments? Can I hear from members?
Chair?
Yes, Mans?
I think we must allow, Andre must identify who it is who's going to tell us if people have their hands up on the chat.
Yes.
Because it could be that there are things on the chat that he's not seeing and he's saying he's handing over, but he must hand over to somebody so that we know who's handling the chat and the hands that are up.
Chair, okay. I was assuming that all other three colleagues, but I think if we can just ask maybe Sukwanda and Tenda who will indicate to us who is indicating they wish to comment, Chair, because Margaret okay. is managing the presentation.
Okay. Can we then, Tenda and Sukwanda, if ever there's anyone who raises their hand on point number one, if there's no one raising
Good afternoon.
Hand, yes.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Chair, and good afternoon, yes. Members. On my side, I am looking in the chat. I have not seen any hand right at the moment. I have been looking in the chat, unless there's a member, unless I also have the same problem. But I am looking beforehand at no member that has indicated that they yeah. to speak on my side.
All right. So there's no hand on the first point as proposed earlier and discussed. It's agreed to. Can we take the second point? Same and actually
the same.
Yeah. On point number two, over the next three financial years, the budget allocation for industrial financing program will decrease by an average of 8.1%. There is actually the summary conclusion which was discussed before. If ever maybe there's comments on that one, can I actually get members to comment? Can you see any hands of members? If not, can I ask that we move?
No hands, Chair.
Okay. Item number three, because it was actually circulated, one assumes that members did read through. Item number three, termination of the 12I incentives in a concern for the committee. There is actually the detail on that one. Is there a hand on this specific item? If there's no hand on this item, there's no hand. Okay. Can we ask that we move to item number four? Ease of doing business. We did actually have the discussion and the summary, which was actually consulted. Let's see if ever there's anyone who wants to make a comment on this specific one, ease of doing business, as summarized below point number four. If there is a hand, can I be informed? If there's no hand, can I then confirm that we have no problem or issue on this item? We'll take the next one. Item four, agreed to. Can we proceed to item five? Enhancement of the BEES portal and rolling out to SMMEs through local banks. So there is actually the discussion we have and the summary at the bottom, item five. Do we have any hands on the item five? If there are no hands, can I actually ask that I look at the next one, item six, if we can move to the next item. Development of the reimagined industrial strategy. There were actually discussions, and we actually summarize as we have it at the bottom, and it has been circulated and to members. Any hands? If there are hands, can I ask members to comment? If no hands, can I ask that we move to the next one, item number seven? If you can move to item seven. Implementation of trade agreements that would grant greater access to the African market for South African goods and services. So there is actually a summary of the specific detail relating to what we mean by that. So if ever there's any suggestion or comments, do we have any names? If there are no names or hands being raised, can we then proceed to item eight? Item eight is South Africa's stance on the WTO statement regarding export restrictions during COVID-19. It was actually summarized in terms of what it means, and for members, it was circulated. They have had a look at that. Is there any hands, any comments, questions for clarity? If none, may I ask that we move to item nine? If you can move to our next item, invoking section 11 of the NCA. If I can actually check if members have got any comments on that one. If not, I'll just want to check if ever there are hands raised. If none, item nine is agreed to. Can we proceed to item 10, which is compliance with BBBEE legislation during the COVID-19 pandemic? There was actually an agreed summary and a discussion we had. Are there any hands on this one? If not, on item 10, agreed to, can we proceed to item? Yes.
Yeah, can the DA doesn't agree with item 10.
I agree with item 10. Okay, can I just check? It's just not agreeing.
Mm-hmm. We don't believe it should be there.
Okay. I'm not sure if ever there's any further comments from members that would like to talk to
the some item. Other members may agree, but the committee does not welcome that, certainly not from our side.
So the DA doesn't actually agree with that.
Chairperson?
Okay. Yes. Who's talking?
Mr. Mbuyane.
Oh, Mbuyane?
Yes. Yeah, Chairperson, thank you very much. Sorry, man, this connection is earlier on, quite a challenge.
Yeah, no, we got
I think with regard, yes, with regard to 10, I think the compliance with BBB, it's in order, Chairperson, because it talks to the transformation policy of government. And also in terms of the reimagining of the industrial development, I think it is proper change.
Well, maybe you can just rephrase that the committee with the exception of the DA.
Okay, so you have an objection to that as the DA. So, but the committee is in agreement.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Chair, I think this would apply to the ACDP because the ACDP's policy with regards to triple BEE is not the same as the committee's.
Okay. So can I just...
Mr. Chair Mulder here?
Okay.
Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, giving me opportunity. I just want to put on record that the Freedom Front Plus also objects to this. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. So can I then say, let's actually note the objection. And obviously in terms of item 10, it's actually agreed to. So parties which actually are objecting will be reflected as part of the conclusion of the item 10. I'm sure that's agreed to.
Chair, it will be noted in the minutes of the meeting, Chair.
Okay, okay. No, thank you very much. Can we then ask to proceed to item 11? Because item 10 is agreed to with those reflection. Revision of budgets and APPs to factor in the impact of COVID-19. There was actually the agreed summary after the discussions we had. So I'm sure members are comfortable or are in agreement with the summary we have, because we actually had a bit of discussion on that. Can we then actually agree with item 11 as the committee? That actually takes the conclusions, and we actually have recommendations. We can actually then look at recommendation. It has got portfolio committee trade and research having considered the proposed 2020 budget vote 39 trade industry competition recommends that the House adopts the budget vote 39 trade industry and competition. The committee further recommends that the House request the Minister of Trade and Industry should consider. I think there's a point at the bottom, if you can actually scroll us down. Can you actually, yes, thank you. The item is engaging the Minister of Finance to enhance industrial and developmental financing to stimulate the economy in support of the reimagined industrial strategy as implemented through the master plans. So I think that actually then gives us the recommendation in terms of the conclusions that we have gone through, which is actually what we suggest that the minister should be able to engage the finance minister. I'm sure that concludes the report. And I'm sure for committee members, there is actually agreement that we should actually adopt the report and then be able to proceed from the meeting. Chair? Secretariat, are there any
Chair?
Specific...
Sorry. Yes. Mr. McPherson, I think, wants to raise a question, Chair.
Okay. You'll know that, you may not know, Chair, as you went in the Fifth Parliament, but the DA will take this to the caucus for consideration. Caucus. So we will abstain. Thank you.
Okay. Chair, yes. May I say? I was going to propose that members of parties take this to their particular caucus, and we do not formally adopt it at this stage, but we have scheduled formal adoption on Thursday, so that all parties have the opportunity to take the matter to the respective caucuses, unless the committee is of a different view. But that's normally been the practice. It allows us to effect the changes, Chair, and bring a clean document for formal consideration.
Okay, so do you have actually a sense of what the timeline, if parties will need to actually then do the consultation?
Yes.
Because if you say we have an opportunity or space, we'll speak about program now.
Yeah.
You say that we have opportunity, you say this coming Thursday.
Yes,
then
Chair.
Then you can be able to look at the time for parties to consider and be able to come through on that. Okay, can I just check from members of the committee if you have any further comments on this specific issue?
Mantashe wants to speak, Chair.
Mantashe, you're on the floor. Can I take your comments? Yeah.
Chair, I was rising, Chairperson, to say let us as committee members do such a proposal that the report not be to be adopted now, but Secretariat rules and do the necessary amendments, and then we set another date for the adoption, and that would give other parties the opportunity to table it in their specific caucuses.
Okay. Mbuyane?
Yes, Chairperson, thank you very much. Mine was just to say, principally, we are adopting the report for the consideration of the report. But we have been given a chance as political parties to submit. I don't know whether we extend it now, the report for submission. Or consideration in principle, considering the report what we have submitted currently and the changes that the Secretariat will amend, then we will move on forward. So, that would be my proposal.
Okay, so it looks like we can suggest that it's secondment of Mantashe to say Thursday when we reconvene, we can be able to actually then consider the parties. Formally, and then be able to actually get the decision on the report. Okay. So thank you very much. I think Mbuyane, I will say Mantashe moved. Mbuyane agrees, seconding Mantashe. Thursday, we will actually then consider for adoption formally as a committee. Right. So we actually can move straight to program.
Yes,
because
Chair.
I think for the report, we actually have just agreed on how we manage that moving forward and noted some areas that might be important to consider. Secretariat?
Chair, as a result of the ministers addressing the committee today, as well as the NA Programming Committee, there are some changes to the program, and we thought maybe we can share with the members, Chair. Also, with regard to scheduling as well, Chair, there has been a template for it for the next 2 weeks, which indicate that the slots that we have on the program may not be the slot that the scheduling has identified, but different dates has been given. So if Margot can just put that up, Chair, on the shared with us, and I'll can take members through the program going forward for next week, Chair.
Okay.
Chair,
yes.
If you can see, we keep the technical infrastructure institutions for Thursday as it originally was scheduled for, and we have scheduled formal consideration of the report, Chair, for Thursday, Chair. Then on Tuesday, Chair, We've moved iTech that we would have had today to the next Tuesday. And we'll also do the second quarter, the fourth quarter financial and non-financial performance reports of DTI and EDD, which we are required to do in terms of Parliament's performance plan, Chair. Then that will be the only meeting scheduled for the week of the 2nd of June, Chair. And if we go to the 10th of June, Chair.
Okay.
We are need to complete our oversight report, Chair. So we consider the first draft of the oversight report on that day. And on Friday, we'll have a briefing by DTSE on beneficiation and localizations. As maybe can see, the Wednesday and the Friday, it was originally scheduled for Tuesday and a Thursday, but the scheduling indicated the slots given to us was for Wednesday and a Friday, Chairperson, hence the change in the program reflecting that.
Okay, so looking just 12 June, that actually goes ahead as proposed earlier, and then 17 June, it's actually the suggestion that we look at those.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. If Margaret we'll just move down or up or whatever.
Move down, yes.
Yeah. So we haven't received the formal scheduling of this particular week, Chair. So, but those are the proposals that we have on the program for members to consider, Chair.
Okay. There's 17 June, 24th June, and 26th. 26 is part of what we've spoken about earlier at some other point. And then these ones highlighted in red is what's suggested or proposed. Is that the understanding, Secretariat?
That's correct, Chair, because we have to comply because we're dealing with the fourth report. So we need to finalize that report before the Parliament arises for this session, Chair.
Okay. Honorable members, can I ask that we look at the suggested amendment of our program and request that the members actually indicate if they are comfortable for us to proceed with the implementation of the program as proposed before us. Honorable members?
Chair.
With those changes.
Can I propose that we proceed, bearing in mind that we will remain flexible depending on what slots we are given by Parliament meetings to take place?
Hammonds, you moving. Can I check with other members of the committee?
Chair?
Yes. I second. Is it Mutawum?
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Mutawum. Can I check from members if ever there's any objection for us to proceed in this way? If there are no objection, I will actually then thank you for actually adopting the program and hoping that we will be able to actually implement it. When there are changes, we'll actually make sure that there's proper consultation and we get your support to help us actually navigate the program in this environment that we're actually operating in. Can I ask Secretary if ever there's any other issue you'd like to raise? But just, at this stage, yes.
And just to remind members that the NCC submitted the responses. So we've emailed it to members, so members have the written responses of the NCC of last week. Remember, they didn't have a chance to respond to us verbally, and the committee agreed that they will submit written responses. It has been submitted, and it was forwarded to members. So members must just please note that they have it in their emails.
Okay. No, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes, let me hear this. Who's talking?
We have noted, we have seen the email, but we have not looked into it yet.
Yes.
We received it just before we came into the meeting.
No problem.
No, thank you very much.
I just wanted to make a request, Chair.
Yes.
I wanted to request Secretariat to please forward to us the record of our attendance to committees.
Oh, the register. Technically, that's what I mean, the register of our attendance of the meetings.
Yes.
No, thank you very much, because we don't get it signed or circulated, but I think in those calling of names, I'm sure you're correct to say we should circulate. Thank you very
much. I'm saying, Chair, I'm referring to 2019-20 financial year, Chair.
SARS for tax purposes, Chair.
Okay.
For tax purposes, yes.
Okay. That's fine.
Yeah, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honourable Montesh. But maybe, Secretariat, the request might actually be useful for all the members.
All members, Chair.
Yeah, all members of the committee, so that at least we don't actually have to do it because someone has, but it's good information, it's appropriate, and for submission, it's actually information that's required.
Yes,
can
Chair.
I ask that we actually, is there any other issue you'd like to raise administratively?
No, Chair, not from my side. I don't know, not from my side, Chair.
Okay. In terms of the agenda, I think we have come to the end of our meeting. And can I thank all of you members for your participation, and our portfolio committee meeting is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Bye-bye to honorable members and all the supporting team. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye, Chair.